Welcome everyone to the All for Business podcast brought to you by the Lynchburg Regional Business Alliance. It's just two or three of us in here. We've been wearing our masks. We're all vaccinated. So we're going to take our mask off so you can hear us better. And as long as it doesn't tear up my glasses as well. the Business Alliance, I'm a member, and the Business Alliance is big enough to do a lot of things such as this, but small enough to where we all know each other and like we're part of a family. And it's powered by our local business here in town. My name is Chal Nunn. I'm the host for this episode today. I work with Ryan Weeks, who's in charge of communications and marketing with the Business Alliance. And I'm a retired physician and physician executive at Centra, and I do some executive coaching now. I changed my career because I developed Parkinson's disease. And so when you watch this, if you're watching on video, you may see me wiggle and move some, but that's because of the medication for my illness. The reason we're doing these podcasts is that I felt like we've been in this COVID cave for all year, and it's time to get out, see each other, get to know each other, humanize everyone in a very positive and collaborative way. So today, we're interviewing Reed Woda, who's the interim city manager. And Reed, it's good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, glad to be here.
I'm glad you're able to get a chance to talk. Because, you know, Eric, we have one of my kids the same age as you.
That's right.
Hard for me to take. And they're the people running the city are my children.
Well, we've known each other a long time, so it's good to be here.
And first thing I'd like to say is we're in the Virginia. Yeah. And you look around and you see, it's just hard to believe it's here.
Absolutely.
And when I come here, I feel like I'm in a Chicago and New York City hotel. So it's amazing. So I know you grew up here from a little kid on. I want to find out about your growing up here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about you, because I know your parents.
Yeah.
I worked with your dad, so sure. Tell me about life.
You know, I'll tell you, Lynchburg was such a wonderful place to grow up. From opportunities at school and in sports and everything else, and just the wonderful community. It was a wonderful place to be. And when I was away and going to school and starting out first jobs, I always kind of knew, Lynchburg is a place I wanted to go back to. And I think we're finding that with a lot of people in my generation, is that people want to be here. This is a place that is, a little different than some of the really large cities, and certainly there's benefits and detriments to that, but Lynchburg, it just has this great quality of life that we sort of all saw growing up here, and we want to be back. And I think probably, people like my parents and you all knew that about Lynchburg and kind of knew what you were doing when you came here.
So. Well, I thought it was a great place. Well, that's unusual for somebody who's young to know they want to stay. Well, you're a little bit like me. I didn't, in my career in Southern Virginia, North Carolina to Lynchburg, you've kind of stayed Shenandoah Valley, Lynchburg as well.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to be in the Shenandoah Valley for a while. Love the Shenandoah Valley, but small town and certainly maintain great friendships there and all kinds of great things going on there, but I'm glad to be in Lynchburg for sure.
So you went to high school
Graduated from UC Glass. So.
And you're playing sports and stuff like that?
So I swam and I was on the track team. Okay. All the good things. And had the opportunity to be in music and theater and things like that. Too. So,
and brothers and sisters?
Yeah, two older brothers. They both graduated from Glass too. And doing great things. So.
Tell me where you went to college and how that started your career.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to James Madison University for my undergraduate and master's degree. And I had the opportunity when I was there to work with a town manager of a small town just west of Harrisonburg called Bridgewater. Lots of folks in Bridgewater College.
Right.
And this gentleman had been the manager there for 40 years. Can you believe that?
Wow.
So he helped me get my first manager job when I was 22 in the town of Elkton, Virginia.
Okay.
And was there for a few years.
How big is Elkton?
Elkton's about 2,200 people.
That's about the size of my hometown, Clarksville, Virginia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So it was a great place and got to be in the Valley for a while and went off and got my PhD and eventually came back up.
So you do some teaching too, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yep. So I teach two universities. I teach at UNC Charlotte, which is where I went and did my PhD. Mm-hmm. And I also teach at the Virginia University of Lynchburg in their Doctor of Healthcare Administration program. I teach a class on leadership there.
Right.
So it's really been this really great thing to be able to continue to do that while working, and hopefully bring some of the practical aspects of what I do into the academia field, and as well as continue to learn while I'm there as well.
Were you in Woodstock last before you came
here?
Well, I was in Bedford for a couple of years, but before I was in Woodstock.
Okay. That's usually a stopping place on 81. You
know, that's right, yeah.
Gas and stuff like that.
Big fan of Woodstock. I love them. Yeah. So.
You know, when you look at your training to do this job and your school, what is, I'm sure each place has a unique challenge. And what have you found to be a unique challenge that you didn't expect that you've had to learn?
You know, I think it's true that every place has unique challenges, but I will say, just kind of starting off, that everybody sort of has the same general issues, right? I mean, we're trying to do good work for all the people that we serve. I think that, I found different communities. When I started out at Elkton, I was like maybe the 10th manager in about 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, so there's still a little bit of political unrest. So that's sort of unusual. In Lynchburg, I think, we're at a point right now where we're sort of at this inflection point where we've had a lot of growth, a lot of really great redevelopment in the last 20 years or so.
Right.
Now we're trying to figure out what our next steps are. And we're learning as we go through and seeing what's going to happen.
So what would you say your biggest challenge here in Lynchburg so far?
Gosh, I think...
I don't want to get political, just in general.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So one of my biggest things is that, Lynchburg has big plans for itself. And Lynchburg is a community that likes to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
One of the big challenges is figuring out how to pay for that, right?
Right.
And really making that a big public... It's very public, right? So as opposed to some organizations that don't have to be quite so public in that, we've got to put it all on the table.
Right.
We've got to figure out all those things. So, it's really a wonderful thing to be in a community that wants to do things, mm-hmm. that wants to do things well, wants to invest in itself. But, it takes some time to figure out how you prioritize that.
Right.
And which investments do you make and how you do that in a way that is responsible for the long-term future without being too close.
Yeah. If you look at the investment the city has made downtown, tremendous investment in the academy,
right.
And also, I guess a lot of the infrastructure and things like that. What kind of return on investment has that been? If you look at the tax base and the revenues from the tax base and a vibrant downtown, how does that compare to what you've invested?
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I can't cite the ROI number, but I can tell you that the value of the property that we're seeing downtown, the businesses that are open now that weren't before. For directly for like sort of tax revenue, I mean it's unbelievable. Just because there's so much more going on in Lynchburg compared to the amount of money that was spent. I mean it certainly I know at the time over the last 20 years there's been a lot of conversation about how much money do we put in and or not, but I can tell you we probably make that up in a year's time easily.
Okay.
And certainly everything that's been invested downtown because it's just the people being here. I mean, you know what it was like 20 or 25 years ago. I remember, swimming at the Y and then, having, late swim practice and driving home and, on down Main Street, all the streetlights turned, blinked yellow. And,
right.
Because nobody was there. Right.
Why?
Well, that's certainly not the case anymore. Yeah. And so that, I think, is reflective of a community that, again, has invested in itself and has seen a lot of benefit. And a lot of people have wanted to be here because of the work that was done over that time. And the question is, how do we continue that momentum, but also make sure that's equitable throughout the city as well?
When you look at the services that the city does, and you compare it to our surrounding county, it feels like, to me, and I don't know the numbers, that the city of Lynchburg bears a little more social responsibility than the surrounding counties.
Yeah.
And that allows them to have lower tax rates, less services. We have higher tax rates. What has there been any thought about how to balance that out? Is it just swept under the rug, or am I totally misreading?
Yeah, sure. So I think that's a really fair point. And certainly, as everybody knows, we certainly have a higher tax rate in the city, but we have a series of different responsibilities, which I can go on all day about that. I think one of the things that's been done that has made a lot of sense, and there certainly have been challenges that have gone along with it, is that when there are areas that are of mutual benefit, the city's done a good job, I think, of leading regionally where we've had opportunities to do things together with the counties, right? So instead of...
We have a very collaborative relationship with all of them.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So, so instead of all of us running our own landfill, for instance, we have a regional landfill, which is in Lusburg. And certainly, is something that we've done to to be less costly. Again, there's always those sort of relationship challenges because, you know, if you're controlling your own thing, then that's you know, you don't have to work with anybody else. But so there certainly have been challenges to deal with that. But certainly the benefit of having a landfill regionally is so much greater, for instance, right?
Yeah.
I think there's potentially some other opportunities out there you know, we really think about how impacts, you know, cross-jurisdictional that are not solely tied here, right?
Right.
And I think that when you live in a city, you expect a higher level of service, and there are certain things, you know, public safety, of course, is a tremendously important part of that. Transportation, you know, we are responsible for our transportation network. And so I think that, you know, people expect a little bit higher quality service living in the city. But there are things that certainly transcend jurisdictional bounds, like social services and
right.
things like that, that we should continue to grow in our regional efforts. And we do some stuff now, but that continues to grow.
Because I think that poverty rate around 23% in the city.
Right. Yeah.
What is it in each county around this roughly?
So it's certainly a lower number. I know when I worked for Bedford County, it was around 10%.
Okay.
That was in, you know, mid 2010. So you know, certainly an economic boom. I don't know where it is now. But you know, the county poverty, the rural poverty is just different than sort of urban poverty. In many cases, you know, we think about, for instance, in Bedford County, the sort of intense poverty that you see in certain parts of the county
right.
Is very different than what you see in the city.
Right.
Just the, you know, the social mechanisms are different. Certainly with the same impact, but it can be a different challenge. And so I think one of the things that we've done really well in the city has been able to identify that as an issue and something that we want to tackle. Have we solved all poverty in the city? Of course not. And that probably will be something that will be something ongoing for a long time. But the fact is we certainly believe that education and workforce development and opportunities for people to live in the city and thrive here is something that will fight that.
Right. Just shifting gears a little bit, I served on a school board and I know how political it can be between your superintendent and board. How do you manage the city council?
Yeah.
I mean, it's do you have any special ways that you think about it?
I don't know that I would say I manage city council. I think
I think that.
Yeah, right. So I think you know, one of the things that the manager's job is to figure out how to help city council coalesce around the vision.
Okay.
And you know, you get folks that run for elected office and that are really, really, really passionate about what their issues are, mm-hmm. Or the community's issues. And I don't think I've never worked with an elected official in all the localities I've worked with that didn't care about the locality
right.
or care about the community. So I do believe that everyone, in their different ways, cares about that. They come about it from very different perspectives oftentimes.
Right.
But my perspective is that, you know, we have to find areas, particularly in an environment, you know, nationally, where we're very divided right now, we have to find the areas that everyone can agree on, right? That let's make incremental progress where we can in this moment in time. And I think we're doing that right now with our budget process that we're doing right now.
Right.
You know, we're investing in public safety and
right.
some infrastructure and things like that. So I think that, you know, sometimes you know, you have very polar ideas of for people who all care about.
We see that in the papers and the budget discussion.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing is, it would be easier for everybody if, you know, everybody was all on the same page, but that's not good for the community because you're not getting that push and pull to make better decisions. And I do believe in that the conversation does make us better. You know, I think that we are looking for a continued opportunity to find those issues that are something we all care about.
Right.
And I think I would also say that I don't think that there's anybody any elected official I've worked with that doesn't care about some of the sticky issues. A lot of it is just how you approach and what your policy perspective is
right.
and how you solve them. And you know, we can have a debate all day about that.
Right.
But at some point you have to do that. So you know, I think one of the things we did really well this year was when we started our budget process, we really just sat down with them and said, okay, what are the important things that you want to do this year? And really focus on. Let's just be really good at that. Right.
Right.
Let's not try to do everything. Let's try to be really focused on making what I would call incremental progress.
Yeah.
That is really very substantive and meaningful. So I think that's how you do it. And mm-hmm. I think it's over time. You help them see. You help them coalesce around the vision. Certainly, I think the manager's vision is important to be a part of that conversation. But it's not the only part.
Right.
And certainly, so maybe a little different than you know, like a CEO of a large company, where that, I think it's probably the CEO is much more,
right,
much more the driving factor. I think the manager certainly is that to a certain extent. But the whole purpose of city council is to represent the community and hear, you know, their voice. And,
right,
and you know, it's can be easy to not hear that if you're in the office all day.
You've got some big capital projects. Yep. I mean, the Lakeside Drive, the bridge, that's quite a project. You know, drive by and look at that. I see a very expensive project. Yeah. And then I get the police headquarters.
Yep.
Those are the two main capital things you've got on the table now, or the others?
Those are two of the really big ones. You know, I think it's interesting, the Lakeside project is really, and I don't know that we've done a good job of talking enough about it, because what it will be is, it will be an opportunity for us to showcase the potential for urban wetland restoration in an urban lake that has been a challenge. So this is just as much as it's a transportation project, right, where we're building a bridge.
Yeah.
This is an ecological project that I think will be a model internationally, because there's all these places all over the United States and all over the world that, you know, where we built these earthen dams for recreational lakes that are not used anymore, they're not safe anymore, just like ours. And we are going to restore that to a place that is ecologically sound. And nobody, believe it or not, nobody's really figured out how to do that the right way yet. And so we are sort of blazing the path. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think that, you know, with Lynchburg, I think Lynchburg has a really long history of doing that in a lot of different areas. And I think that Lynchburg will show, for instance, in this project, that we can both be ecologically responsible, but also focused on public safety.
Right.
And you know, in my vision, one day will actually be a tourist kind of attraction, right? Where we are bringing folks in from other places to see this. Also, you know, really focusing on the opportunity to partner with the five colleges and universities that are in the city to do research in this place, particularly for environmental reasons. And I think that's phenomenal. I think that'll be a showcase for us. It'll take us a long time to get there, but that'll be important. The police station is also just an incredibly important part. You know, I don't know if you've been in the police station.
I've been in the old church.
Yeah.
It's fallen down.
It's fallen down, and it's just not where we need to be.
No.
And while, you know, our focus is always on citizens, you know, we also have to provide a basic backbone infrastructure to make sure that our police officers and others, you know, feel like they are valued and this is the way we want them to be. And you know, place and space matters,
right?
And what the physical look is at, it really matters.
Well, you got some great leaders in there, Ryan Zugman, Tex Wormser.
He
put together the mass vaccination site. My wife, Kate, volunteers giving vaccines there.
Yeah.
What do you think makes Lynchburg unique?
You know,
we all probably have different views of that, but for you, what makes us unique if we try to pitch ourselves to somebody? Just what it means to you personally.
You know, I think Lynchburg is such a diverse place. I think it's very unique in that respect. I mean, we have all kinds of different people that live here and do business here and work here. We are the lead, I think, community of the region. You know, we certainly believe that Lynchburg is the hub, and a strong Lynchburg makes a strong region. And I think that what makes Lynchburg unique compared to other cities is that we sort of have this very broad array of opportunities, right? So we do everything from having the largest evangelical university in the world to, you know, we have a nuclear hub here, you know, I don't know anybody has the breadth of that, right? Not that those two are
necessarily different. We just interviewed Rex Shevin, and he gave us an idea of the breadth of it. It's breathtaking.
Oh, it's amazing. And, you know, we have a regional health system that is is a phenomenal system.
Centric.
Doing really great things. So we have this sort of really, really great breadth of opportunities. And, you know, in communities like ours and a lot of places, they, you know, sort of lost all the manufacturing over time.
Yeah.
That certainly isn't the case in Lynchburg. I mean, we are a maker community. We're also an education community. We're also a medical community. So we make things here too, and that is phenomenal. And it's something that is I think very unique to Lynchburg, and is different than I think a lot of places.
Yeah, when I meet people out of town, I tell them Lynchburg. I have them guess what's Lynchburg famous for. They come up with whiskey for alcohol for, and then I say no, it's not that. And I say it's we were the home of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell.
Right.
We make fleet in them too.
Yeah.
So that's your manufacturing. So we say the same thing. And we are a major nuclear center for the country. and nobody can believe it.
Right. You, I mean, just who does all of it, right?
Yeah.
We do, right? And that's why
we do places. Aren't we the largest city without an interstate in the country?
To my knowledge, yeah.
So that is unique as well. Yeah. It helps us in some ways, but maybe hurts us in other ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have assets that are really atypical. You know, we have one of the longest runways at our airport in the state. You know, certainly Dulles is bigger and things like that, but compared to Roanoke or Charlottesville, I mean, we have the longest runway, and that brings opportunities for folks. And, you know, so we have a lot of infrastructure that is different from the interstate, but, you know, we have great rail infrastructure and et cetera that I think really benefits us.
It's a very beautiful town.
It is. Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
The hills and the river and the homes, it's very nice. Let me just ask one more question before we take a break. When I first came to town, I remember Rachel Flynn. Mm-hmm. And she had a vision. She really pushed that vision. Do you think a lot of what we're seeing today is a result of her early work?
Yes. Short answer is yes. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I know that when she first started, Chuck Church was the city manager.
Yeah.
I think he had that vision as well.
Right.
He was a big part of it. I think at that time, you had this really great coalition of folks that had a vision for what this community could be.
And I think Kim Payne.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim did incredible work. And I think there is, without a doubt, the benefits you see today are a result of that vision you saw 20, 25 years ago.
Well, I can tell you my experience with the city is just fabulous. The services, the people, the way they interact, the way they take care of you. You feel it's not like working with the government or something. It's like working with my community member. So anyway, we'll take a break, man. We'll get back with some more pointed questions for Reed. See what else we can learn about Lynchburg. Thank you. I'm Chael Nunn, your host for our podcast, All for Business, the Lynchburg Regional Business Alliance. And we're going to shift our conversation with Reed Whitaker today and some more specific things about cities and towns to get his views. It actually came from this book that I read called Our Towns. It was given to me by one of the city council. And it's this couple that went all over the country and visited towns similar sizes to Lynchburg, similar situations. And like from Greenville, South Carolina, to Duluth, Minnesota, to Riverside, California. And they came up with 10 and a half key ingredients to make a city, a small town work. So I want to see how we stack up. I've written them down, and I'm going to ask Reed to comment on each one of these. So the first one is that people work together on practical local possibilities rather than allowing bitter disagreements about national politics to keep them apart. Do you think we've been able to do that?
I think Lynchburg probably has as good or better track record on those issues as anybody does. You look at in more recent years, a couple of the big initiatives that the city has been a part of, certainly the Bridges to Progress project. You know, lots of folks have been involved in trying to find ways to help alleviate poverty. But there's things, you know, that have been ongoing for a long time that have been you know, wonderful initiatives that the city either has or hasn't been involved in.
Right.
You know, I think I remember, you know, growing up, you know, I remember, you know, things like Day in the Park, right? So, which was not run by the city, it was run by the Junior League. And it was something that was wonderful. And so things like that have been wonderful. The people, members of the community have come together to do things.
Right.
And I think I said it before, you know, Lynchburg is a place that wants to do things. The city is certainly a partner of that. But in many cases, I think you identify lots of things in the city, or the people in the community.
You do see a little national politics and say, let us just be up.
Sure.
You see it, maybe some of the sanctuary city movements were sort of outside the scope typically of what the city would do. But fortunately, they've been smaller in number.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to drive our school board or drive our city council.
Right. I think that's true for the most part.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, something I like to often say is that, you know, there's really no right or left way to pick up the trash, right?
We've
got to pick up the trash. We've got to make water every day. We've got to put fires out. And that's the wonderful, beautiful thing about local government is that we, you know, while there certainly are people who approach issues from different perspectives, we are just here for service. We are just here to make the quality of life of the people that we serve the best that can possible.
And we talked about this earlier. I'm convinced, like, all of our elected city council care about Lynchburg.
Yeah.
So they have different views about how it should be managed, but they all care about the place. So it sounds like we meet number one. All right, number two, you can pick the local patriots and leaders. who are the key players, like Jimmy Bryan used to be or George Stewart?
You know, I think that Lynchburg, again, has a long history of folks that have been tremendous players. I think that we are in a generational shift right now, where a lot of the folks, maybe in your generation, are starting to want to do different things and things like that. And sort of my generation, we need people to start stepping up more than maybe we have.
Right.
I think, you know, I will say about my generation, I think people care a lot about the community. And I think there's people that are involved in lots of things. But I think that with just the way life is right now, it's a little different than I think it was for us than it was, you know, 30 years ago, where people had maybe a little more time to do different things. So I think that an area where we have to really be thinking is, you know, who are those next generational leaders coming up in our community? And it's really important that we identify those folks, whether they are elected officials or school board members or whatever they are, right? And I think there's certainly some great examples of that, that people who are stepping forward. But I think that will continue to be a challenge.
Yeah, I think as major businesses here have been absorbed by outside corporations, you lose a little bit the local leadership.
Yeah, so you lose some of those leaders that are maybe in a home office somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. So that always concerns me. We've got towns their size.
Yeah.
So I feel like there may be a little bit of a gap there in the non political leadership.
Yep.
And who are the movers and shakers? So if you've got a business that wants to come to town, who's the mover and shaker they need to meet that sells this town?
Yeah.
And those, the history, well, I didn't know Jim Brown and George Stewart, but what I heard about them, they were the kind of people that could make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's important to think about that and develop that. Number three, the phrase public-private partnership refers to something real. You think we've done that?
I think Lynchburg has done that, yes. I think that one of the things that we've identified is that we need to be much more intentional about having serious partnerships with what we call our anchor institutions. So these are the institutions of higher learning, our health system. You know, we've always done sort of things together, but we need to be thinking more intently about how do we develop those relationships into the point where we're actually doing things that are on the ground, that are tangible, that people can see. And these are things like making sure that people in large institutions hopefully are buying as locally as they can, right?
Right.
That we are doing development projects that are socially responsible in coordination with those groups. So I think we've done a lot of that stuff really well. I think we have some area to grow. One of the things we've identified in our economic development strategy is the development of our anchor strategy. Some of this has been challenged because of COVID, because it's kind of hard to get in the same room.
Right.
But before COVID, we were really starting to make progress on potential plans for what we're going to do together. And we'll get back to that point. But I really do believe that those private agencies, whether they're nonprofits or for-profit, can really do some great things. I think there's other really cool things going on, like our Stay Close, Go Far program with Beacon of Hope, which is a program that has allowed so many kids who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to go to college. If you basically go to college, community college for free, and other options. So I think there's some really great examples out there that we can point to. But again, I think developing the relationship between the city and the anchor or institutions, you know, really will make what Lynchburg thrive to be.
What is the Craddock-Terry example of public-private partnership?
Yep, so that's a little different.
Took a long time to mature.
Yep, and the same thing.
They had to start all of them, same thing here.
Absolutely, yeah. So all of those things, you know, where we're leveraging both public and private assets to, you know, make things work, right? So that can mean anything from actually, you know, cash that we're helping with to making sure that the road network meets the needs. And so that's a lot of what we do in our economic development.
People know the civic story.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to define that, but it's like people are familiar. I'm familiar.
Right.
I don't know if everybody on my street's familiar.
Right. And I think that because Lynchburg has grown so much in the last couple decades, there's a lot of folks that are new to the area. They know the story that they've been a part of, but there's a long history in Lynchburg. Good and bad.
Good and bad, yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges that I see, even as public servants, you know, is we bring people into our organization, sometimes they don't know their stories. You know, one of the stories that is really meaningful to me is about the Darrington neighborhood, the Jefferson Park neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we always talk about the Riverside Park swimming pool closing.
Right.
But there's also the Jefferson Park pool closed,
yeah.
which was the black pool,
right.
As opposed to the white pool. And yeah, swimming pool. So, you know, there's a lot of folks that don't know that story.
Right.
And realize that, you know, there's a lot of people in that neighborhood that live there at the time. And so we're doing a bunch of work right now to build relationships and plan for that neighborhood. And I think developing big plans and addressing and being real about what the challenges have been in the past is okay.
Right.
But we also, you know, we also have a lot we can look to as really being very powerful and positive. You know, the city as a community built the school system that it did. It's phenomenal.
Right.
And so it's really, really great.
The story I was told about EC Glass is that they spent so much money on it to make it of high quality that all of the council got voted out because they spent so much money.
Could be. Could be. Heard that before, yeah.
So I've heard that. But I don't know if it's made up or not.
Well, I think that's one of those investments that certainly paid off, you know.
It paid off. And then number five, I believe they have downtown. We didn't when I came here, but we do today. Even all torn up, it's alive. You know, not just with workers, but you can see what it's going to be.
It's alive. I live downtown.
Yeah.
Lots of folks live downtown. You know, it like we talked about before, you know, the vision of the Rachel Flynn's, the Kim Payne's, the Chuck Church,
yeah.
All those who came along to do really great work. You know, we see that success story, and I think that we should take that success and realize that it will be a little different, but we should replicate that throughout the rest of the city. We need to really develop that vision for what other neighborhoods can be throughout the city. And while downtown is tremendously important and it will continue to be a focus,
right.
You know, there's lots of the city that needs investment.
All right, number six, they are near a research university. Now, I suppose they mean like a UVA or a UNC or a Duke,
right.
or VCU, whereas we have universities and graduate programs, five colleges, but I don't know if it's a research or such.
I wouldn't characterize it that way yet. I think that there's vision for how graduate programs continue to grow, which is really what is going to drive a research institution. You know, I look at an institution like where I went to graduate school is at UNC Charlotte. I had actually never even heard of UNC Charlotte before I started looking at graduate schools. But it was an institution that started in the 1940s to help folks coming back from the war to get an education at night. Right? And now it is an institution, you know, 60 years later, that has, you know, 25 or 30 PhD programs. And, you know, part of that is being in Charlotte, but also UNC Charlotte is contributing to Charlotte being the growth engine that it has been.
I think that's light rail from downtown out to UNC Charlotte.
That's right. So I had the really good fortune of working in the mayor's office when I was in Charlotte when all that was approved.
Yeah,
certainly was a small player there, but it was really neat to be a part of it. But I think that's the case with Lynchburg. I think you know, Liberty has done, in particular, Liberty has done a fantastic job of continuing to grow the academic programs that they have. You know, certainly I think they will kind of develop their vision for what that institution will be.
Right.
But certainly a value as we see in the book and as you know, we've seen throughout the nation, you know, driving that research and innovation from places that are research intensive is tremendously important to innovation and technology, and that's going to be the future of what we're doing here.
And relationships with the city and these institutions. Critical.
That's right. That's right. And so I think, you know, our relationship with Liberty right now is really good.
Yeah.
We have a really strong relationship. There's really good folks there right now. Same is the case for Randolph and University of Lynchburg and Virginia University of Lynchburg and CVCC. Lots of really great people that really care a lot about this community. So we're doing stuff together. And, you know, it's not only that it will be good to have, as research and innovation kind of continues to develop in these institutions, would not only be good to have that just to have it, but it will benefit, I believe, the existing manufacturers and other organizations that you know, that are needing to modernize over time, as they all do. So it's really, I think it's an exciting time to be in Lynchburg.
Yeah, I think, you know, Liberty is important, And I'm actually interviewing three people at Liberty over the next week.
Great. Yeah.
You know, Charles Billingsley,
yep.
Hugh Freeze, yep. And David Bratt, who's yep. The head of the business school.
Yep. So, wonderful.
Great. All right. They have and care about a community college.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have one.
We have one, yeah. Yeah. And it's the programmatic offerings there are fantastic.
Right.
Their president is a visionary guy. He's just a good friend of ours. Just is absolutely fantastic.
Right.
We're so lucky to have CBCC, and look forward to continuing to see what happens there.
Right. They have distinctive and innovative schools.
Yeah, I think Lynchburg goes. So what's interesting is I was rereading the 10 and a half things before I came over, just because it's been a couple of years since I read the book. But think about the school system. Lynchburg was an innovator in developing innovative schools, an early adopter of developing innovative schools 30 years ago. Right?
Yeah.
So the T.C. Millers, the Deerington Elementary School for Science and
right.
Innovation, I think.
Governor's School.
So we have those distinctive areas. And I think one of the areas, we do all kinds of career technical work. I think, again, the next thing is, all right, what does that look like in the future? How do we continue to innovate? So Lynchburg has that history, and we should continue to double down on that, because it's, the great things you see at Dunbar, T.C. Miller,
right.
and all of our schools, really, will continue to grow. And we are developing a really, really strong relationship with the school system. I have a great relationship with the superintendent and her staff, and we are really thinking about, what is the next phase
right.
of what public education is in Richmond.
Yeah.
The fact is, the city and the schools can't be separated in that.
Right.
We've got to understand that the development of the city is really heavily dependent on the redevelopment or the development and continued
right.
growth of the public school system. There's nothing more important than that. And we can do all kinds of work we want, but you have to be developing your children to be the next generation. It's really, I really believe that.
I always felt that our school system is sort of at a crossroads and a bubble in a way. There was a housing bubble that led to the recession. I think there's a healthcare bubble that's too expensive.
Sure.
Something's got to give with that. And I think education, higher education, has become, the debt for employment.
Yeah.
And so something fundamentally has got to change, and even the way we fund our school system and per pupil, and there's a lot of people push back about how much we spend. It's mostly personnel.
Yeah.
So how can we do it more cost effectively, but with that same level of quality?
Yeah, I think where you look at the cost centers now, we're thinking about the needs of what children are now versus what they were, in the last generation. Right? So when I would have been going to school there, certainly the needs were present, but now we've identified a lot more needs in kids based on what their background is. So I think one of the really important things is that we start to think about how it is that we leverage partnerships between the city operations, what we call city over here, and
yeah.
the schools. We need to mesh those as much as we can.
Yeah.
And that means more than, we do like things like procurement and things like that right now really well together. We need to be thinking about how our social services functions really contribute positively to, for instance, how we contribute positively to the public school functions, right? So we need to be talking to each other. We need to be developing a common theme, because a lot of times we're working with the same children and families.
Yeah.
So we need to be much more coordinated in our efforts there. And I think that will not only drive down costs because we're going to be more efficient, but it also end up in better situations for children and families throughout our community. So that's really where a lot of the cost centers that you're seeing in the school system. Now the other thing is, Lynchburg has done a very good job in the last 20 or 25 years of renovating its secondary schools, so middle and high schools. There's our elementary schools are.
Right.
We know that there's going to be needs for some investment.
Right, a lot of money's been inherited in a way.
That's right. Yep. And Lakewood and Sandusky.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Of course, Dunbar needs some work too. So.
All right. Here's another interesting thing of that city is that they make themselves open and place an emphasis on inclusion and try and attract talented outside.
Yeah. I think that we are ultimately, I think, much more open and willing to accept outsiders than maybe we give ourselves credit for.
Right.
Depending on where your perspective is, you may look at some of the demographic of the city and you may say, maybe my perspective wouldn't be valued in Lynchburg. I don't think that's really the case in most cases.
Right.
So I think, you know, we've got to do a better job probably in some cases of showing how inclusive we are as a community.
Right.
Because that's what, you know, the tapestry of the people that live here
right.
is what makes the city what it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talk about that a lot. We need to talk about it more.
Well, that tapestry is woven in a lot of ways here. It's different than other communities. And we have a more right-leaning evangelical college. Others have a more liberal left-leaning college. And how you balance all those kind of things up, with even race issues and immigrant issues, all those kinds of things. You know, so that what I think they discovered, the people who figured out how to deal with that and make it work is what helps them.
And I would say that most of the people that that I know that maybe came to Lynchburg for a job or something and were worried about whether or not their lifestyle was going to be accepted or whatever, have found that, in fact, yes, that is the case. It's a great place to live, but we know that exists.
I can tell in the 20 years I've been here, Lynchburg is less provincial in a way. It's not who are your people. And I don't hear that quite as much as I used to. And then the last of these is they have big plans.
Yeah.
Do you think we have a big plan to do this downtown?
Yeah.
What's the next big plan?
Yeah. You know, I think the next big plan is how we think about how we, as I said before, how we extend the success of the process or how we did downtown to the rest of the city.
Yeah.
So I'll give a plug for this. Right now, we are in the draft, and the public draft has been published, of a neighborhood plan in Darrington.
Okay.
So this is an area, sort of near EC Glass, if you're not familiar with Darrington, but across Langhorne Road, in back of the neighborhood where Darrington Elementary School is. So again, as I mentioned before, that is a neighborhood that has not traditionally seen very much investment at all.
Right.
In fact, has had a difficult relationship. So my friend and one of our urban planners, Ann Nygaard, who is a really talented person, has led the effort to develop a neighborhood plan in that area. COVID has kind of challenged us, so we've focused to more of a recreation kind of plan. But that is an opportunity, I think, as a model that we can build out, where we've developed big ideas for what the neighborhood should look like and can look like, but also continue to be a place that the people who do live there call home.
Right.
It's not the case that we're trying to redevelop neighborhoods in a way that makes it not livable.
Gentrification.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we need to be thinking about how we make neighborhoods that exist, make them better, safer, improve quality of life. And I think what we can do is replicate a lot of the success that we saw downtown and realize that it's a different model, right?
Right.
Different model, but there's things we can do elsewhere. I think that is certainly an emerging plan. I think, again, our relationship with the school system is something that is continuing to grow. And we will, recognize that it's so critically important to make sure that our schools are as effective as we can be. And I think they are, but I think that for the long run, we need to be thinking about how do we continue to support that, because that is what the next generation is.
You know, I heard you say COVID. We haven't talked about COVID very much, and we're not.
Right.
I think people are tired of talking about
it. I'm tired of talking about it too. But
COVID, I'm sure, accelerated some changes and thoughts about how you can do things for all of us.
Yep.
Healthcare and then your business as well.
Yep.
And then it's 10 and a half. In the last half, they said we have at least one craft brewery.
Well, we have more than that. So we're
doing good there.
Absolutely.
Well, the final question I want to ask is, what's your favorite thing to do in Lynchburg when you're not working? What's your favorite thing to do?
Well, when that occurs, right? Which is
not
all of it. You know how it is.
I know.
I love being on the Black Water Creek Trail, riding my bike or running or whatever.
Right.
That's my favorite place to be. I think Lynchburg's park system, whether it's the trail system or one of the stationary parks, is just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's another big plan that we're starting to
talk about. Bike trail is incredible, you're right.
Yeah. And we're also, another big plan we're developing right now is our long-term parks master plan, right? So then, what are these beautiful parks that were developed in some cases 100 years ago?
Yeah.
What do they look like? What do our programming look like? And that is, to me, I think any city, there's public spaces, I think, are what help define what a community is.
Yeah.
And I think that it is certainly one of the things that, that I love most about Lynchburg is taking advantage of that investment.
Well, Reed, thanks very much for coming on board. It's good to see you again. It's been many years since I've seen you. Probably about your teenager when I last saw you.
That's right.
And I think we can see that Lynchburg is a great place to live, not only because of the physical beauty things we talked about, but you have folks like Reed Wodeka, who grew up here, loved the place, and they're in leadership positions to carry us forward. I think that bodes well for the future.
Thanks a lot, Reed. Yeah. Great to be here. Good to see you.
Next week, we'll be interviewing Charles Billington, and we'll see what we can learn from the singer. Look forward to talking to Charles.